If you're a California conservative, a libertarian, a moderate Democrat, believe in common sense, or just a sane person, this is the political podcast for you. It's the California Underground Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to a new episode of the California Underground. Welcome, everybody. Tonight we have a fun topic. I mean, as if it's not already like shocking enough that like the Newsoms are greedy, power hungry people and are in politics for all the wrong reasons. Tonight, we're going to be talking about how specifically Jennifer Newsom, Jennifer Sebille Newsom, the first partner, has been making quite the living off of nonprofits and video production and all sorts of stuff, thanks to your tax dollars. But before we get into that tonight, Camille, how are you doing tonight?
I am so good. I'm celebrating our first day of freedom in what, 3 years? I'm just kidding.
That is right. Yeah. I
didn't do anything out of the ordinary because I have not been acting like I haven't been free. So did you, did you celebrate?
I mean, I posted that meme. That was my celebration. So, that's about as much as you're going to get. And, yeah, it's funny. I was watching the local news, KUSI, down here in San Diego, and they were talking a lot about the state of emergency and how it ended. And they're kind of talking to a lot of like lawyers and people and advocates who had worked on behalf of like COVID. And I know this is just a little preview. In a couple of weeks, we're actually going to have a 3-year anniversary episode of COVID. That's going to be fun. We're going to have some people on. We're going to sort of like walk down memory lane because there's stuff from COVID that I was just like, we had this happen on a past episode. We were like looking at a video and we watched and it was like, oh my God, I forgot all about this stuff from COVID. It just was like PTSD. I just blocked it out. But yeah, it's crazy. 3 years later, Gavin Newsom finally relinquished the state of emergency. It doesn't feel any different. I mean, I guess that should make the point, like, it hasn't really felt different for a long time now. So why did he hold on to it for so long? Because you're supposed to, by law, the governor is supposed to, when there's a state of emergency, it either ends when the legislature steps in and says, okay, it's over, which of course this legislature was never going to do to Gavin Newsom. They were never going to do that to him and take away his power because it's all Democrats. Or at the earliest possible time when the emergency is over was when he was supposed to actually end the state of emergency. And I think you could make a strong argument that at this point, COVID hasn't really been an emergency for like over a year at this point. Like, really? I'm trying to think of like 2021 or 2022. Now we're in 2023, 2022, 2021 was sort of the last, I feel like, gasp of COVID. But it's finally over. All of that after 3 years, 2 weeks to flatten the curve.
5 months ago, too, where he's like, February 28th. That's what it ends. And we're like, wait, what?
Yeah, it's kind of like the LA Board of Supervisors I saw also voted to end it by March 31st. So they need a full month to wind down their state of emergency, even though it's not really been a state, but LA County needs a whole month to get ready.
They're their own thing.
But that's not really the point.
But this is all fitting because it's Newsom.
It is fitting. Yeah. So happy, sort of getting your freedom back day here in California. State of emergency is over. COVID is officially in the rearview mirror based on the state of emergency. Side note, this has really nothing to do with anything. This is just friendly banter. Can I just say how tired I am of this winter here in California? Like, this has just been abysmal. And I know I've only been here since like 2014 in Southern California. When I came out for law school, and this just sucks. Like, this has got to be the worst winter I ever remember. You're shaking your head because you're probably like, there's been worse winters here.
No, it's not that. Like, this is probably as bad as it gets, but we only get to enjoy this every few years. And give us like oftentimes in February, it's really hot. Like this is like when bathing suit season starts. And so it's sort of like we're enjoying, those of us who have been here long-term are enjoying the long winter, because next month we're going to be blasting our ACs and it's going to be so expensive and we're going to be complaining about the heat wave.
Yeah, that's sort of what we were talking about this morning, was like, when we walked out of the gym, we're like, man, this does not feel like San Diego weather. And I was like, well, look at it this way. By summertime, we'll be sweating in our households going, mm-hmm. this sucks. Where's that cold weather again?
Exactly.
But at first it was fine. It was, you know, you got to put some blankets on, you got to put on your comfy sweaters and kind of felt like winter, especially around Christmas time. It felt really nice. Got to snuggle up near the tree. Now I'm over it. Now I'm like, okay, it's March. It's time to turn the page. Let's get back to spring. Anyway, that's not the point of what we're talking about tonight. We weren't talking about weather. We're talking about the Newsoms, and specifically this idea of Newsom Inc. So to give you a bird's eye view of what we're going to be talking about tonight, Jennifer Sybil Newsom, she's sort of in the center of all of this. She deemed herself the first partner of Gavin Newsom. She did not want to be called the first lady. She wanted to be called the first partner. So they established the office of the first partner. We're going to be talking about how much she gets in taxpayer dollars for that. We're going to be talking about her nonprofit, The Representation Project, which is a film company that produces documentaries for children to watch in public schools. And basically, it's a big vicious circle of tax dollars and lobbyists paying into the Newsoms, and sort of like, it's a legal way, it's like backdoor lobbying for the Newsoms, because there's certain amounts you can only donate to Gavin Newsom. But when you have a nonprofit like Jennifer does, you can just donate to the nonprofit a crap ton of money. And you don't think that has any influence on Jennifer and Gavin? I mean, that would be hard to make that kind of distinction. First off, what are your initial thoughts, Camille, about this whole thing? Like, what's your first initial thought about this rabbit hole you dive down into?
It's scary what politicians can get away with and do get away with. And yeah. I know this isn't a strictly Democrat thing, so I'm not going to say that, but this is bad even the right word? Like, this seems so bad to me. What I know we're going to go through what Open the Books has exposed, but what they mm-hmm. have really broken open is there's so much. It's scary. It's scary how much power they have, how much money they can get and control.
Yeah.
Because money does equal a lot of power.
Yeah. So let's hop into this one. This is the article that really sort of started it all off. Our good friend on Andrew over at Open the Books. He's been on the show a couple times. They've done a really good job sort of exposing as much as possible in California and all over the country. But specifically here in California, they expose this whole Newsom Inc. So here's sort of the graph of what you can see happens here. So here's Jennifer. I assume she's giving a speech in Spanish, which we'll talk about. She is sort of at the center of all this. Not really Gavin Newsom. He's sort of off here as the governor. So what happens is she has this representation project, which is hers. She also has the Girls Club Entertainment Incorporated, also hers, and the Office of the First Partner. So what happens is she gets money from the representation project, 1.5. They pay into the Girls Club Entertainment Incorporated about 1.6. The representation project creates documentaries that is then adopted by the California Board of Education, which then they use in all of their schools. And then the California schools pay back to the representation project, $1.4 million. It really becomes this whole web of corruption. And then she also gets a whole bunch of money to the Office of the First Partner because she has to have staff. So let's go through some of this article. We'll kind of talk about and break down like what's going on, and to the best of our ability, we'll break down what's going on. In summer of 2022, Governor Gavin Newsom convinced the state legislature to provide $4.7 billion for K through 12 mental health services, which, among other things, funded 10,000 new school counselors. Gavin Newsom convinced the legislature because Jennifer Sybille Newsom, the wife of the governor, convinced him. The biggest advocate for mental health funding within the K through 12 California public schools in the Newsom administration was Mrs. Newsom. In fact, Gavin Newsom created the Office of the First Partner so his wife could promote her policy agenda using taxpayer money. Since 2019, Sybille Newsom has been armed with nearly $5 million and nine staffers within her subdivision of the governor's office. Last November, Sybille Newsom's advocacy and California's spending priorities were outlined in a glowing news article. Loretta Whitston, director of the California Association of School Counselors, a trade association representing 3,000 California school counselors, was quoted, "While the governor's recent investment will add additional school counselors to the workforce, there will be an even greater need to access films and curriculum support materials such as Sybille Newsom's documentary series. We would love to work with her and support her efforts." So here's this little graph right here to give you an idea. Melania Trump had a staff of 5 people. Jennifer Sybille Newsom has a staff of 9 people. It costs $1.2 million. And the first lady, Dr. Jill Biden, has a staff of 12 people. So, all making sense right now, or do we need to slow down, do you think?
I'm just waiting for you to say that somehow Sam Bankman-Fried was behind this too. That would be the only thing that would surprise me at this point.
That would not surprise me if he was actually behind this. I did see he actually...
I haven't seen any connection.
He's got his hands in a lot of Democratic things. I don't think he has his hands in this specifically. And they go on to say, the representation project leverages taxpayer dollars to promote radical ideologies, personally profit, and push the political ambitions of her husband. She brags that 2.6 million students have seen the films nationwide. So she's not only selling these films to California schools, she's selling them out to national schools as well. And that's one way she's making money. The Representation Project contracts with her for-profit film production company, Girls Club Entertainment. Since 2012, Sybille Newsom received $1.5 million in salary from the nonprofit. Furthermore, since 2012, the Sybille's nonprofit paid her profit, Girls Club, $1.6 million to produce films. So as you can see, as long as you set up the right entities, the nonprofit, the for-profit, you can start to funnel a lot of money from one place to another. Last month, our investigation broke the story that Representation Project was not in compliance with the California Charitable Solicitation Act. The organization was not permitted to operate or solicit donations in California most of 2022. All right, so let's start there. She has this nonprofit, and it came out that she actually was not in compliance with the charity, with how you're supposed to run a charity in California. This is from The Globe. In August and September 2022, The Globe shared a report by Open the Books, which sued, and then blah, 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 blah. Open the Books auditors found California state spending was 979 state vendors who give $10 million in political donations to Gavin Newsom during his 2010, 2018 recall election, 2022 election cycles. Meanwhile, these companies reaped $6.2 million in state payments. They also found this pay to play.
Can I add something?
Sure, go ahead.
The Girls Club Entertainment was also out of compliance starting February 4th of 2020 until January 6th of 2021 when they revived it with the correct paperwork. But the nonprofit paid The Representation Project paid Girls Club $150,000 in 2020. Now, sure, it's possible that they paid it in the first, 4.5 weeks of the year, somewhere between January 1st and February 4th, but that's probably unlikely. And so they paid the Girls Club Entertainment, which was not in compliance and wasn't supposed to be operating as a business at that time, $150,000 during that time. So both things were out of compliance, basically. it's still accepting and receiving money.
And we talked about this, how it seems odd that someone with so much connection to power and basically right in the middle of everything in Sacramento couldn't get their nonprofit and their corporation in compliance. I mean, right. This is sort of like basic stuff that they don't, most people just pay attorneys to get take care of.
Don't you have to have a board with a nonprofit? Like, isn't that a requirement?
Yes.
Not with a corporation. So you have your board, you have your treasurer, you have all these people that should be, you know, what it's 4, 5, 6, 7 people at least that are running it. So it's not like we're talking about this one stay-at-home mom running around with all her kids and trying to do her at-home business, and somehow, some way, the paperwork just kind of slipped on by. I would totally have grace for that. I get that. But even a working mom, I shouldn't say a stay-at-home mom, just any mom, you know, doing her thing. This is a woman who has a nonprofit with a board who, we're talking, again, California, married to the governor of the fifth largest economy in the whole world, and somehow she managed to the corporation and the nonprofit fell out of compliance. What's going on there? I feel like there's just no excuse for that in this situation.
And it goes on to say the nonprofit is currently delinquent with its charitable solicitation registration in California. The annual RRF-1 form necessary to renew the organization status was rejected early in 2022. So this was recent. This was, you know, last year. The representation project should have filed a new form and paid a $200 fee. $200. It's hard to believe that the Newsoms couldn't come up with $200 and some attorney to figure this out. According to California law, nonprofits cannot solicit funds while delinquent. Nevertheless, TRP, the representation project, solicited and accepted donations throughout the entirety of 2022. Fitting that I'm wearing the Elites Hate You shirt, because this is just like, I mean, talk about rules for thee, but not for me. I know that's like thrown around a lot, but this is like an exact example, especially with the Newsoms, that Jennifer was out of compliance, not following the law, delinquent, not supposed to be receiving funds. She still received funds. She still received a lot of funds. There hasn't been any investigation. Has there been any sort of penalty? I mean, most nonprofits, you have to run them by the books because of the fact that they're nonprofit, because you get that benefit of you don't have to pay taxes on certain things. You don't have to pay a lot of taxes. But because of that, because of those benefits comes with it the enormous amount of compliance and work you have to do to remain a nonprofit. Most nonprofits I know, they worry about like, well, we're a nonprofit, we can't be political and we can't veer into this lane or that lane. And it's a lot of work to keep a nonprofit in compliance. Jennifer Newsom just basically flaunted all that, was not in compliance, didn't file the paperwork and pay the measly $200 fee. And where's her punishment? Why is she not being treated exactly the same as the small nonprofit owner who was just trying to make some, you know, do some help or help the community or something like that? She's not being punished. So I haven't even heard that she's got a slap on the wrist to say you're not supposed to be taking in this much money while all of 2022 you were delinquent. And this is an exact example of the hypocrisy and that sort of rules for thee, not for me mantra of the Newsoms. And you know, there's no other way to put it. I mean, you can go example by example by example of the Newsoms, but this has got to be the latest that I don't know how anyone could defend her doing this in terms of soliciting when she's not supposed to be, and the scheme itself, which we're going to dive more into. But this is some shady stuff, and it's not as above board as I think they're trying to make it out to be. What are your thoughts?
They're going to get away with anything. I mean, who's going to go after them?
Right. Really? And that's the thing. Like, who's going to investigate the governor's wife when he has so much power and influence? in California. It's not just because he's governor, but because he's politically connected to so many people who can make, I mean, if you're a rising Democrat in California, you have to kind of kiss the ring of the Newsoms. You're not going to rise through the ranks without sort of bending a knee to the Newsoms, because they have so much power and influence. What are you going to do? You're going to go against the Newsoms? And that seems to be a one-way ticket to like political irrelevancy in California, is they'll just bury you as a Democrat. So who's going to, no one's going to investigate him, and no one's going to call him out on it because they're the Newsoms.
Yeah.
So let's see what else.
If there was an investigation, like let's say Secretary of State, Attorney General did something, those are his friends. They're just going to be like, we didn't find anything wrong.
The report goes on to say, after our work earned national news coverage, the Representation Project quickly scrambled to file their registration paperwork. Their paperwork with the California Attorney General is signed, dated, and received January 12th. A process that normally takes weeks was executed in just hours.
Oh, okay. It helped to have friends in high places.
Right. And so, again, we have this sort of, no one's going to investigate him. The attorney general themselves should have been like, wait a second, you've been out of compliance for a whole year. Maybe it's time for an investigation. Maybe we should look into your nonprofit. No, it's fine. We'll let you cut to the front of the line and we'll sign off on it. And you'll be back in compliance within a matter of hours, not in several weeks, which most people have to wait for. So not only did Jennifer Newsom and her nonprofit not be in compliance and break the law for an entire year, they were essentially given preferential treatment by the chief law enforcement officer of the state, the attorney general, who then signed off on their documents to be in compliance within a mere matter of hours. And there was no backlash at all. That should anger people. That should really anger people how they get away with this. And if you're not angry by this, then you're obviously just a loyalist to the Democratic Party and Gavin Newsom. But this is frustrating to see. And you look at this and go, when you have a one-party state who has so much control and so much influence, what do you do if the chief executive officer and the chief law enforcement officer aren't holding people accountable when they should be holding them accountable?
It really amazes me. My husband and I were actually talking about it today, what people are willing to turn a blind eye to and just not care. And then, you know, he was obviously voted back in. I think this came out after the recent election, but even the whole mask thing with last year's Super Bowl, when, you know, oh, I only took it off for a photo and I didn't breathe with Gavin Newsom. You know, I held my breath for those 2 seconds. And then, of course, a bunch of photos came out of him during the game, not wearing a mask. And people just so quickly forget that and don't care because they're going to vote Democrat because they're loyalists, like you just said.
Yeah. Well, speaking of stuff,
speaking of things that
did not come out, came out right before the recall. Do you remember the story about Rose McGowan, how she came forward because of Harvey Weinstein? Mm-hmm. So Rose McGowan, if you remember the actress, let me see if I can pull up this tab. Oops. Hold. Hold, please.
Holding.
There we go. I have way too many tabs open. Give it a second. Any day now. Anyway, well, while that's loading. Here we go. Let's see. I want to find what she starts to talk about. This was in regards to Harvey Weinstein. And she started speaking out about it. And this is one of her posts where she blasted the hypocrisy. Remember when Hollywood actresses and paid off activists wore stupid black dresses at the Oscars that was sponsored by Time's Up, who were meant to help abuse victims. I told the world they are like they were a lie 3 years ago. Wake up, hard truths are in me and uncomfortable. Alyssa, it's lizard people like you. SDK Knickerbocker, Governor Cuomo, President Tina Chen, who hurt people. Your time is up. So then there was the California recall election coming up, and she had an interview with Dave Rubin. And this was a big deal. I remember actually watching the whole thing. Like, Dave Rubin really pumped up this whole interview. She shared that 3 months before Rose's Weinstein story broke back in 2017, Ms. Newsom sought Rose out in order to squash her story. She asked Rose, "What would it take to make you happy?" So this was her squashing this Rose McGowan story right before the election.
Why do you think Jennifer wanted to squash the story?
Let's see. She replied, "I didn't hold the Jennifer story. I totally forgot about her, actually, until I was on Dave's show and was only vaguely aware of the recall. That's how little that blonde, basic, evil lady occupied my mind." What was the story? I can remember she... Hold on, I'm looking this up. What was the story? Dropped a bombshell. Oh, yeah, she endorsed Larry Elder. I remember that. The story was is that... So this woman, I don't know. This is what Rose McGowan said. Some blonde lady name with the last name of Newsom cold calls me. And I was like, "David Boies wants to know what it would take to make you happy." So basically this was a long time ago. I think what happened was, basically Jennifer Newsom was trying to protect Harvey Weinstein with this, because Jennifer was in the film industry. She was in the Hollywood in the film industry. That's sort of why she has this video production company now. And I think at the time, Rose wanted to come forward with the story, and Jennifer Newsom cold calls her out of nowhere and says, "Well, what would it take to make you happy to not happy and not talk about this?" But that story didn't come out with, I don't think it came out with enough impact on the election, obviously, based on the recall. So yeah, just throwing that in there as well. Another thing that she did, supposedly, based on what Rose McGowan said. And then she went in and she testified against Harvey Weinstein. I believe she broke down and cried, and it was a big deal. I'm sure she put on quite the show for the Harvey Weinstein crowd. Anyway, let's go back to the article.
Screenshot that I sent you. I texted you the screenshot of the financials.
Yes, I do. Hold on, let me see if I can pull that up. Let me pull this up. Hold on. This is why we need a producer who can pull this stuff up a lot faster than I can.
Are you hungry?
We're hiring for the great salary of free.
Intern?
You'll be a producer intern. Okay, so what are we looking at here? You sent this screenshot to me.
These are Harvey Weinstein, however you say his name, political donations in California.
Mm-hmm.
And so he donated $5,000 to Gavin Newsom for governor in 2010. Now that, I mean, okay, whatever, that's fine. He's allowed to do that. But I just think it is interesting that she, Jennifer, allegedly tries to silence Rose. Then he's donating to her husband's campaign, which he was her husband at this point. They got married in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes on to try to destroy him later when it's convenient for her, I guess.
Yeah. So people can't really see right here. It says Gavin Newsom for California governor 2010. he wasn't successful. This was a different run before he became governor. I think this was
when right. I think that's something else came out and he kind of backed off of that run, right?
Yeah. Well, Governor Moonbeam ran again. So, I think they kind of wanted to clear the field for Jerry Brown to run again. And then okay. It was sort of like it's okay, kid. Like, you be lieutenant governor. And then when Jerry Brown's gone, you can be governor. But yeah, this was all stuff that when Harvey Weinstein was the darling of Hollywood and everybody loved him and everyone was talking about how great he was. And he was friends with Oprah and he's friends with all these people. And, I mean, this is when all the abuse was happening and Newsom was accepting campaign donations from him. Harvey Weinstein, no one blew the lid on Harvey Weinstein and what he was doing, I bet that people still would be taking money and having meetings with Harvey Weinstein to this day. Like, if no one came forward, the only reason they all came out and said anything or tried to destroy him was because it was the whole Me Too era and he sort of became the big Me Too person. And it was Me Too and everyone was coming out and explaining their stories. And if that had never happened and none of those stories came out, I bet you Harvey Weinstein would be donating to Gavin's presidential campaign. Like, I think that's like where, honestly, that's where we're at. And I bet he'd be giving crap ton of money to Jennifer Newsom's production company and nonprofit. So,
right. And she might be accepting it. And I'm not saying he's not a dirtbag, and I'm glad things came out. And it's Hollywood's disgusting. It's disturbing. And I think we all knew this was going on, but no one was really willing to speak up and say anything. And I'm glad that things came out, which, of course, that did open up the door for false accusations or people taking a situation that was, you know, consensual and then turning it into, oh, but he raped me. And that's horrific, too. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to get so much hate if I say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. If women are willing to sleep their way into a position, I'm sorry, that's not rape. And you did that to yourself. Yes, a man took advantage of you, but you allowed it. I mean, you decided that role or whatever was more important than your integrity, and you allowed yourself in that situation. That's not rape. Rape exists. Yes, rape happened. I'm not saying it didn't, but you were not naming names because obviously I wasn't there for any of these situations, but the women allowed themselves to be taken advantage of because fame was important. That was their priority. That's what they were after. And they put themselves in situations where they were going to socially climb their way through Hollywood. So I can't fault man for that. I mean, I disagree with it. I absolutely disagree with it. I think it's horrific and sickening, but there's men out there like that. And if women are willing to put themselves in that situation, men are not going to say no.
Yeah. And I think Hollywood's probably going to be the worst of it, where, I mean, it's always the fabled casting couch, and it's been going on, Lord knows how long, since Hollywood even started in Los Angeles. This has probably been going on. It probably just became accepted. That was sort of how things were done in Hollywood. Harvey Weinstein was just the wrong time, wrong era, and he got called out for Me Too. And again, I'm not condoning any of this and saying any of it is acceptable. That's just like you're saying. I think what we're trying to say is that it's interesting that people had no problem associating with Harvey Weinstein because he was a big, powerful person in Hollywood. I mean, there's the character on Entourage who they make fun of Harvey Weinstein, and they make a caricature of Harvey Weinstein. And how powerful he is and how crazy he is. And I think it's even more upsetting that there's probably women like Jennifer Newsom who were aware this stuff happened and were aware, because she was in the industry, how stuff happened. And she never blew the whistle. For as virtuous and as wonderful as she thinks she is, she let this happen. She never came forward. She never was brave about it. She wanted to keep her place in the film industry and keep her foot in Hollywood. And she had no problem letting Harvey Weinstein donate to her husband's campaign for governor. All of that was fine until he was caught. And then Jennifer Newsom had to go and testify, you know, in trial. And then all of a sudden it was a big issue. So, I think that's the hypocrisy of it all, is that everyone was sort of okay with it. And that's how things were done until Me Too happened. And then people were not okay with it. And people who were okay with it all of a sudden turned around and were like, wait, I'm not okay with it now, because they blew the lid on it. So, definitely a tricky situation. But anyway, back to Jennifer Newsom and Office of the First Partner. So if you think this sounds weird, Office of the First Partner is a new thing. It's not something that is customary in California, sort of California governance. It's not like the Office of the First Lady. It's the Office of the First Partner. And says she took the title in part to emphasize her contributions to the governor's policy agenda. As she said during one interview, her title signals an intentional shift to reimagine the role of a governor's spouse altogether as a partner who supports their spouse's work in service of the public. Okay, that sounds nice. In 2019, Governor Newsom created an office for his wife as a division within the governor's executive team. According to a press release, the first partner in her team will focus on lifting up women and their families, breaking down barriers for our youth, and furthering the cause of gender equity in California. Since inception, Jennifer Newsom's, Siebel Newsom's office has received nearly $4.8 million in directed taxpayer funding. The Office of First Partner has grown from 7 employees with a budget of $791,000 to 9 employees with a budget of $1.166 proposed for 23 to 24. So, continues to grow, continues to make more money.
What are these how much money? Doing? What is their job? I'm sorry. I want to know her staff. What are they? What is their job? What are their roles?
I believe I just went over it. It was to reimagine the role of the governor's spouse altogether as a partner who supports their spouse's work in service of the public.
No, but her, she has staff. She had, like, right. What do her individual staff members do? They reimagine things?
Partner, they are a partner who supports their spouse's work in the service of the public. If that is, I believe that's pretty clear that she's, no, it's as confusing to me as I'm not really quite sure. I think they're just a liaison, and I think they're part of, they have an office in Sacramento right down the hallway from the governor, and they're connected to state legislature and lobbyists. And that sort of continues the vicious cycle of the nonprofit and the for-profit.
Do you think to keep his wife?
Go ahead.
Sorry. Do you think he needed to keep his wife busy so that he could have affairs and she was busy doing her thing? So he was like, here's $1 million. How about it?
Well, I've heard rumors of that. That never came to fruition, though. Wasn't there a rumor, like, not too long ago that he was having an affair with some secretary or something?
Speculation when that whole thing with his canceled trip to Scotland happened, and after his booster shot, and people were like, he's having a bad reaction. No, she insisted it be canceled because such and such was on the agenda for, they were, you know, going to be a part of that trip. And she, Jennifer, didn't want that Gavin going with that woman. I forget her name. So it was a lot of speculation, but he has previously had affairs and he has admitted that, or at least one, which is why I said that. I'm not accusing him of currently having an affair, but he did previously have an affair that he admitted to. Therefore, I am making a terrible joke that he's just trying to keep his wife busy so he can keep carrying on with his affairs.
Ruby Rippy Gibney. He had an affair with her while he was the mayor of San Francisco. So.
His campaign manager's wife, right?
I think His aide's campaign manager's wife. Yeah, his best friend's wife he had an affair with. That was the whole Travis Allen thing.
Yeah.
Where he called him out and said, why would you trust Gavin Newsom if you can't trust him with your wife?
See? People just turn a blind eye. They just don't care.
Yeah. His infidelity. And as long as she's getting paid and she's got her office, I mean, it's the Hillary Clinton thing. You know, it's what everyone says about Hillary Clinton is, why does she put up with Bill and all his philandering? Because she got to be senator and secretary of state. That's why she became one of the most powerful women in politics, in American history. So,
yeah.
If that's sort of the arrangement you're fine with, then some people are fine with that arrangement. Let's see. What else does it go on to say? The well-being of children is a major concern of Jennifer Sybille Newsom once she engages with her, blah, blah. Ironically, Newsom's notoriously strict lockdowns exasperated the youth mental health crisis, a point even Jennifer Sybille Newsom conceded. And this is just talking about the how she's an advocate for children's mental health. Between state funding, state regulation, policy advocacy, and radical moralizing explicitly intended to shape social consciousness, Jennifer Sybille Newsom, various government, private, public, and philanthropic partners have proven to be a powerful self-reinforcing network. Through the Office of First Partners, Sybille Newsom has 9 dedicated staffers, $1.2 million annual budget, helping secure nearly $5 billion in state funding for an additional 10,000 school counselors. Political class. Okay. So that's the whole Open the Books article on Newsom Inc. There's some other stuff that we can jump into if we want to talk about. What time are we at right now? Okay. So there is a video that I'm going to share. This is from
just one.
I could bring up several videos, but this is one of her talking about one of her new documentaries on, ironically, Fox News. So I'm pretty surprised to see Fox News.
Special, as we say at the start of every show, and we did tonight, one of our missions is to be pro-family. So we wanted to share with you a new documentary out later this week called Fair Play that shines a light on family gender roles and the overlooked challenges of domestic life. Take a look.
When I became a mom, I felt like my identity completely changed.
I really didn't understand the amount that she had to endure.
Es una presión tremenda.
Tremenda, yeah. It goes back to the twisted notion of, well, you just got to ask for their help. I don't want to ask.
What time? Yeah, I have 2 phone calls from work already.
I became obsessed with a quest to figure out what was happening to us.
When it comes to care, we're so far behind. We're saying we value work.
This is all just highlights from Bill Gates' wife, isn't it?
Joining us now is the writer, director, and producer of Fair Play, Jennifer Sybille Newsom. Jen, great to see you. It's so easy to say we're pro-family. Everyone says we're pro-family, but what is it in reality? It's a whole different thing. And what I love about this film is that you really focus on the specifics of what it means to be pro-family and what we need to change in order to make America more pro-family.
That's right. Thank you. So really, what we need to do in America is recognize that the majority of households are dual income households. The days and ages of women at home, at the kitchen sink, they're far and few between. And we have so many single parent households in this country as well. It really takes a village. And what this film recognizes is that we all have lives outside of work. And the workplace needs to recognize that and uplift that so that people can be their best selves at work. And I'm just so grateful to have been able to make Fair Play because it really was this deep dive into recognizing that the majority of mothers are breadwinners or co-breadwinners. So 84% of Black mothers are primary or co-breadwinners, 67% of Native American mothers, 62% of white mothers, and 60% of Latina mothers are primary or co-breadwinners. And that's our new reality. Women today are doing more domestic work and care work at home than mothers in the 60s. So we have to check ourselves on that and recognize that we've created workplaces that are around men's life patterns and history of only bringing home the bacon and then being taken care of at home, that's an old model. And in fact, it didn't exist for many families, especially families of color. So the new reality is that we have to create workplaces, again, that recognize that private lives also matter. So it's this dance between the public and the private life that we need to unveil and accept, and then create policies like childcare and flex time and family leave that will help move us all forward as a society and enrich our society, because we've been doing all of this work on the unpaid and invisible backs of women.
Exactly. That's what's so interesting. I mean, and one of the things that comes out so strongly, you've got professional women who work hard, they go out, they earn the money, often more than the man in the.
I just wanted to pause here, and I don't know if this is Steve Hilton putting words in her mouth. But it's interesting that he talked about at the beginning that this documentary is pro-family. And we've talked about this a lot on this platform, how a lot of Democrats are not necessarily pro-family, and they're not pro-creating families, and they're not pro-supporting families. They're pro, well, I should say they're pro the government supporting your family, and they're pro the government looking after your kids, and they're pro, you know, preschool, the moment your kid is potty trained. But they're not like pro-family, like you and I would talk about being pro-family. It seems like that's not in line with what their policies are. I couldn't see if she like really agreed with that in the beginning. I think Steve was just kind of putting words in her mouth. I don't know if, did you pick up on that as well, the whole pro-family thing?
I did, but he asked her what that looks like today, saying it's kind of the pro-family. We can just throw that out, but what does it actually mean? But here's what I find really interesting about everything that was just said, and is specifically what he actually just said, is that they're talking about how women are actually out earning husbands in some of these dual income households. Mm. I thought we were still fighting for women to earn more money because we're like earning considerably less than men. So now I'm confused. Are we now out earning our husbands? I mean, I'm not, I don't work, but women that are working, are they out earning their husbands now? Is that the majority? Because that's what they just made it sound.
Yeah, that's I thought the whole thing was the wage gap between, it was like, what, 73 cents for every dollar?
Yeah, I thought that was a part of her office now. Like, I was looking at the webpage and there was like the whole, you know, equity for women thing. And so it sounds like it's flipped. But then back to what you just said about policies, like they say they're pro-family, but it seems like they are always enacting these policies that really hurt family financials. So they're talking about, I understand some women want to work, and I'm not, you know, talking on that whatsoever, but Democrat policies tend to hurt families in the sense that they're making it unaffordable for moms to stay home, and they need to have dual income households. And this is now, okay, well, since we need that, now we need to, you know, share in the home responsibilities, which I understand that too. If both parents are working, you know, both should probably be helping out at home. Mm-hmm. But she's like, well, let's, you know, change the norm now since most households are dual income. But what about changing policy to help a parent be able to stay home?
Right.
Where's that?
Yeah, it's well, let's just continue to push it the way it is as opposed to equalizing it. Which, I thought it was just interesting how they were talking about pro-family when the Newsoms and the Democrats are not entirely pro-family.
That means different things to Republicans, I think.
I get, it does definitely mean completely different things. All right, let's finish this out, and then we'll go on to some other videos.
In the household, in that traditional setup, and of course, there are families where you have all sorts of different arrangements, and some many single parent families as well, and then come home and do a whole second job. It's unpaid, as you say. What can we do to? I mean, just in terms of the policies, what's the sort of central idea? Is it that actually, if companies, and let's just focus on the employer piece here, gave men more? Set an expectation that men would also be given time to be do the parental role and the family role. Is that one of the directions you'd like to move in?
Yeah, so there's what needs to happen in the home and what needs to happen at work. At home, fathers need to step into care. There's so many benefits to fathers stepping into care at home. We've actually found that when fathers do 40% of the domestic work in childcare, they're less likely to be on prescribed meds or antidepressants. They're happier. They have greater longevity. They have better sex lives. Their marriages are more stable. Their partners, if their partners are women, are happier, more fulfilled. They have more leisure time. Their marriages, again, are more stable. Their children benefit too. And it's really cool to hear that if fathers do 40% of the child care and domestic work, the children have less behavioral problems, cognitive development, and healthier long-term relationships. So it's a win-win if fathers step into more care at home. In the workplace, then, we have to reduce the stigma around men playing a role in care. We all know that when you're a father, you're a caregiver. By virtue of contributing to the birth of this child, you are a caregiver. It is your responsibility too. And your children, as I mentioned earlier, your partner, and you will all benefit from spending more time in care. And I think coming out of the pandemic, so many fathers actually got a little glimpse of that and recognized that's pretty special.
I'm sorry, Jennifer. I'm getting on a sign to go to commercial. Okay, that's enough of that. That's enough Steve Hilton gushing all over Jennifer Newsom. He probably got the meter that said, okay, that's about enough Newsom time on Fox News. So we don't care if it's the wife of Gavin Newsom. That's about as far as we're going to take it. We've gotten our fill. All right. So that's that. Did you know that Jennifer Newsom also speaks Spanish?
I think I heard something about that.
Did you know she's fluent in Spanish?
Well, Gavin Newsom did during his inauguration speech earlier this year, mention that she learned Spanish during the lockdown.
Do you want to see some of her speaking Spanish?
Of course I do.
Okay. So that was not actually Jennifer Newsom speaking Spanish, but it does sound a lot like it, so. This is actually her speaking Spanish. Whoa. Don't need the ad.
Epic fail.
Big fail. The reason we bring this up, it's kind of funny. You pointed it out that you found this article way back from what? When was
it? I think it was 2004.
Yeah, this is like an old article. So it's not, she's not even married yet. This is, May 2004 in Lucier. Jennifer Siebel, helping the world in Hollywood. You were able to find this, so this is one of your amazing finds. She doesn't even looks completely different.
She was a lot younger. She's pretty. She's so pretty.
Yeah. Trying to find the, oh, this is her, you know, doing her makeup in the hotel room. Very important. Where did I miss? It's up here somewhere. I know.
It's wherever it talks about, like, high school, and she went to Costa Rica.
Oh, while a child, Siebel was introduced to Conservation International, and one summer during high school, she went to Costa Rica to work for the group. She speaks fluent Spanish. Now, the ironic thing is that either her husband does not pay attention to her enough, or that's not true. Because when he gave his inauguration speech just a month or so ago that we watched it, he did bring up how proud of his wife he was because she would learn Spanish during the pandemic. That's what she was busy doing. Mm-hmm. Or that was one of the things she kept herself busy doing, because she announced or made this big thing in Spanish. I think enough people picked up on it that didn't sound like completely fluent Spanish or someone who had practiced enough Spanish. And so either she was fluent in Spanish since 2004, or her husband does not pay attention to her enough to know that she does speak fluent Spanish, or she was lying. So I'll leave that up to our listeners to figure out, what do you think, whether she actually speaks fluent Spanish or she just kind of made that up.
Maybe Gavin will watch Fair Play and he'll realize he's been neglecting her and he'll pay more attention to her and pick up on what she does and does not know.
Maybe.
Hopefully.
Do you want to watch a little bit of one of their videos? We'll kind of finish out the episode with this.
I mean, because
this is a video that... This was...
To make so, us? No, yes, please.
Okay. Okay. We're going to watch a little bit of this video. This is just sort of an idea of, like, the videos they're producing and sending out to schools. So... If it loads. Awkward time not to load.
Holding.
Here we go. Misrepresentation for those who... Part one, how does the media influence our culture? They spend 17 hours a week listening to music, 3 hours a week watching movies, 4 hours a week reading magazines, 10 hours a week online. And that's 10 hours and 45 minutes of media consumption a day. That's a lot of media consumption. I feel like I'm not even awake to it. Specifically BlackBerry cell phones, according to this documentary.
Kids are not on Facebook. That's for boomers.
That's true. Kids are not on Facebook anymore. First female vice president candidate. They had to ask if she had breast implants. Okay, I think that's a good preview of what she's kind of passing around in schools. For audio listeners, yeah, there was a lot of gratuitous imaging, including a video game stripper with like tape over her breasts. So this is being shown to middle schoolers. Here's my issue as I'm watching this, and this may be a good way to kind of end and sum up this whole thing. Outside of the fact that she's now using the levers of government and power to make millions of dollars for herself and her family, because let's just face it, that money isn't going into like a private offshore account. That money's probably going into the Newsom family. I think Jennifer Newsom, and this kind of ties in with the whole Harvey Weinstein thing. Jennifer Newsom was a product of Hollywood. She's been in Hollywood, and maybe now she's trying to rectify all the issues of Hollywood in the media. But I feel like this is stuff that maybe while she was in Hollywood, it probably maybe she was trying to be, she was part of an industry that did promote this. That was, this is the way it was done. Now that she has the power of being the wife of the governor and she doesn't have to worry about Hollywood anymore, she can kind of tackle these issues. I guess what I'm trying to say is it's easy to be bold when you have nothing to lose and you're the first partner of the governor of California. It's probably a lot harder to be like a Rose McGowan who speaks out and speaks, you know, her truth or her honest truth or her honest opinion. When she knows she could never be booked for a gig or any acting job ever again in her life. So I guess she kind of probably made her bones in Hollywood the way it was, whether it was the Harvey Weinsteins and the way media portrayed. I mean, we saw images in that article. They definitely played her up to look, you know, like a young, beautiful woman that, you know, that the media, she is railing. Now she's turning around and railing against women being objectified when she was in that magazine, sort of being objectified. So I guess that's my issue with Jennifer Newsom, is that she is now, she was a beneficiary of this, and now she's trying to preach against it. And the simple term is, it's just massive hypocrisy. So
yeah, it feels like she's an opportunist.
Yes.
Like she, absolutely, you know, had a bit of fame. I wouldn't say that she wasn't an A-list actress by any means. But yeah, even that article from 2004, I think the opening sentence says something about 29-year-old, but looking at least 5 years younger, which of course that's, you know, us women want to look younger. We do. And I don't disagree with what I saw in her film that is being thrown at kids, young, you know, it's being thrown at adults too. Oh my gosh, the ads that I get on Instagram, I'm starting to feel bad about myself. Like, I'm like, oh my God, I need all the things. Like, it's amazing what targeting advertisement does. So I don't necessarily disagree with the message there, but yeah, it's always the hypocrisy where it's just like, you know, she made her way through Hollywood, possibly slipped her way through Hollywood. I can't actually say that she did, but appears that way, but now all of a sudden when things came out, you know, oh nope, he raped me. Oh, that industry is terrible. Or she hasn't said it's terrible, but this is what's being thrown in women's faces, even though she was a part of that. She literally was a part of throwing that in other, in girls, women's faces. And
yeah. And this video I feel like is completely dated, because I feel like I mean, the fact that they say kids are on Facebook, I'm like, kids are not on Facebook anymore.
Kids are not on this Facebook. Is
obviously a very old video, and their picture of cell phones were all Blackberries. I don't really feel like I see that sort of imagery. Maybe the media has changed. But anyway, the more important issue is this representation project and how she's kind of set herself up into a cozy way. Obviously, her husband has no problem with it. Obviously, he fully supports it. I mean, he gave her the office of the first partner, you know, fully supports it. You know, he can set the budget and say, oh, it's a sub office of my office. So guess what? It's under my purview. And how that doesn't kind of reek of any ethical issues, I guess, because it's equivalent to the office of the first lady. But the Newsoms, you know, they didn't get to where they are, and Newsom didn't make $1.7 million last year, according to his tax returns, by being dumb. And they're smart enough, you know, and a lot of people think that Gavin Newsom and the Newsoms are dumb. Never underestimate your opponent. And Gavin Newsom is definitely not dumb. He's pretty savvy.
Very educated.
They're like, both very smart. Yeah. They're both not dummies.
She's got an MBA from Stanford, I think. She's, you know, we're not talking about, I think she was very athletic.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like she was an overachiever, honestly.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about the fact that she was a registered Republican until 2008.
Oh, I didn't even know she was a registered Republican until 2008. She was a registered
Republican until 2008. And then when she went to re-register, I didn't write it down, but she actually accidentally registered as some far-right party. And then...
Interesting.
Went independent.
But is she a Democrat now? Or is she an independent?
I don't think so. I think she's no party preference or even it's like hidden.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, well, you know, people change. It's like Nathan Fletcher was a Republican for a long time and then
true.
Was politically convenient.
Opportunist.
Opportunist. So yeah, I guess my final thoughts are on all of this. I'm not shocked by it. You know, like when I saw this and I read it and I dove into it, I'm not shocked by any of this. I think this is all pretty par for the course in California. I think this is par for the course for Newsom and his family. It's par for the course that I'm not shocked that she was out of compliance for an entire year and nobody did anything about it. I mean, it's par for the course when the Newsoms are in power. And it is kind of fitting that we're recording this on the day that he ended the state of emergency. He set it to end on today.
Not planned. Totally coincidental.
Yeah, we didn't actually plan it this way. We just kind of picked the date and we went with this topic.
You actually wanted a different topic, but your audience voted.
That's right. Yes, the audience voted. We were going to talk about national divorce in California, but people were more interested in Newsom Inc. So thank you to the audience and all those people who voted. So I hope they all tune in to this episode because you picked it. And we're protecting democracy here at California Underground. As they say, it's like protecting democracy in Ukraine, but we're getting off topic. Yeah. So I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. What are your final thoughts on Newsom Inc. and the grift that Jennifer Newsom has set up for herself?
There is actually more of a grift happening. And now I forget, I should have sent you the article. Maybe I did, and I would have to find it. But there's a third nonprofit that popped up very recently. And so there's actually no financials on it. It's the California Partners Project. And she's on there. And so I don't know if she's getting paid from that, but that she's definitely on the board of that nonprofit. And like I said, no financials are available on it. So that one we have to watch. We'll have to see what happens with that. And I would encourage everyone to continue to watch and see what happens with the financials with Newsom, where his money is coming from, to see, you know, if he ends up jumping into presidential election coming soon. And just, yeah, I would encourage everyone to continue to like watch these companies and where the money is coming. Cause we can, you know, these nonprofits have to release their financials.
Yeah.
So
there's a new one on the horizon. There'll probably be a follow-up episode to talk about that one. All right. Well, I think we covered it. We'll wrap on that and, Newsom Inc. Check it out. Definitely go check out openthebooks.com. They're a great organization. They do a lot of good work. And on Andrew, I keep saying, is it Andrew or Andre? I think it's Andrew. Andrew is a great guy. He's been a guest on the show and he's always willing to spread this information. He's fighting the good fight. So check him out if you want to, you know, throw a couple bucks their way. I think they take donations or something. Maybe they're nonprofit. I don't remember. Maybe they're being funded by a film industry. Who knows? But yeah, go check them out. They do a lot of good work. So on that note, thanks for tuning in. Best thing you can do to support this podcast, make sure you share it with a friend. Make sure you send them a text or a message and say, hey, you should check out this really interesting episode about how the Newsoms are making millions of dollars off of taxpayer funds and how they've set it up to make $1 million off of everything else. That's always the best way you can support the show. You can subscribe, like, share, review, listen on Spotify, watch us on YouTube, all of that stuff. And yeah, we'll see you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.